Okay, I'd like to call the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Today is Thursday, May 4th, and the time is 10:15 a.m. We are joined by Representative Shockey, Representative Wright, and myself, Representative McKay. And Representative Rauscher is on by Teams because he is back in district. And we're also joined by Representative Prox. So our committee aide today is Craig Valdez. Jordan Wright is our records committee clerk, and Lisa is our moderator. I want to thank them for helping us keep the meeting on track today. We are in room 124. And I will be operating the meeting today on behalf of Representative Rauscher, since he is home in district. We have three presentations to go through today, all related to the Power Cost Equalization Program, or PCE. Mr. Valdez will advance the slides for our presenters, since they are all online. We have no fellow legislators in the room. And I would like to thank our records secretary, Jordan and Lisa, for helping us keep things on track today. I'd like to remind everyone, please silence your phones. And if you need to pass a note to the committee members, please get the attention of committee aide Craig Valdez, and he will take care of that. With regard to our presentations, please hold your questions to the end of each slide and direct all your comments and questions through the chair and identify yourself so that our records folks can keep track of who's talking. Today we'll hear an overview of the Power Cost Equalization Program by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, better known as RCA, the Alaska Energy Authority, and the Department of Revenue. Presenting for the RCA will be Becky Alvey, Acting Advisory Section Manager and Tariff Section Supervisor. In addition, we have Kevin Alfterheide, I hope I said that right, Kevin, Alfterheide. He's Finance Section Supervisor for the RCA, and he is available for questions. Presenting for the Alaska Energy Authority will be Curtis Thayer, Executive Director for the AEA. And from the Department of Revenue, we have Zachary Hanna, Chief Investment Officer for the Department of Revenue. So, without further ado, Ms. Alvey, I believe you are going first. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So, Ms. Alvey, please put your name and affiliation on the record, and you can begin your presentation, and Mr. Valdez will advance the slides for you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Becky Alvey. I'm the Acting Advisory Section Manager at the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. And with me is Kevin Alfterheide, and the Tariff Section and the Finance Section review and calculate PCE at the RCA. And the RCA regulates the utilities and to an extent the pipeline and plays a role in the PCE program. And today we'll be discussing the RCA's role. And can you please next slide, please? So what is PCE? In a nutshell, it's an effort to equalize power costs in the rural communities to the average power costs in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Some of the eligible participating utilities are regulated by the RCA, and a large number of the eligible participating utilities are unregulated. They're also referred to as non-regulated. Regulated utilities are subject to the statutes governing utilities at AS 4205, whereas the non-regulated utilities are exempt from some or all of those statutes. Next slide, please. So the RCA and AEA each have specific roles regarding PCE in respect to the administration and calculation of PCE. And so what is the RCA's responsibility regarding PCE? That's what we're going to discuss. Next slide, please. The RCA has three main roles. We calculate the PCE base rate, we calculate the PCE amounts for each eligible participating electric utility, and we determine utility eligibility. In the next slides, we're going to discuss each of these items. First will be the PCE base rate. Next slide, please. The PCE base rate is the weighted average residential rate per kilowatt hour for Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. the RCA adjusts the PCE base rate each year with a new PCE base rate effective July 1st for each year. By statute, the minimum PCE base rate is 12 cents. To calculate the PCE base rate, the RCA reviews the annual report submitted to the Commission for the utilities that serve Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Those utilities are Chugach Electric Association, Matanuska Electric Association, Golden Valley Electric Association, and Alaska Electric Light and Power. Next slide, please.
Okay, Ms. Alvey, just to announce that Representative Carrick has joined us.
Thank you. So we divide the total residential revenue reported by the four utilities by total residential kilowatt hour sales to calculate the cost per kilowatt hour per utility. The percentage shown here on slide six is the percentage of sales each utility had within the cities of Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau in the reported year. And we use this percentage to calculate the residential kilowatt hour sales within the cities on the next slide. Next slide, please. Here on slide seven, this average cost per kilowatt hour is shown in the fourth column, is then multiplied by the percentage the utility's residential sales make up the total residential sales for the four utilities in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau in the previous year to arrive at a weighted average cost per kilowatt hour. This weighted average cost per kilowatt hour for all four utilities is then totaled to arrive at a PCE base rate. As you can see, the PCE base rate for fiscal year 2023 is 19.58 cents per kilowatt hour. Next slide, please. Here on slide eight, this shows the historical PCE base rate from 2001 through present. From 2001 through 2007, the PCE base rate was at the minimum of 12 cents. The highest PCE base rate was in fiscal year 2021 at 20.63 cents. Eligible utilities whose rates are lower or equal to the PCE base rate have a PCE amount of $0. The PCE base rate is one of the aspects of the components of calculating PCE. Next slide, please. There are four components in the PCE calculation. These are non-fuel costs, fuel costs, the PCE base rate, as just discussed, and the adjustments made for not meeting the generation efficiency and line loss standards as applicable. Next slide, please. Fuel costs are the allowable costs, except for return on equity, that are used to determine the revenue requirement for all participating regulated electric utilities. Non-regulated participating electric utilities are treated similarly as they are allowed to include allowable costs in their non-fuel costs. These costs include, but are not limited to, salaries, insurance, parts, supplies, depreciation expense, and other reasonable costs used in the production of power. These costs must be supported. The RCA adjusts the non-fuel costs in the PCE calculation at the following times. For non-regulated utilities, it's adjusted when their annual reports are reviewed. For regulated utilities, it's adjusted when rates are set in a revenue requirement study, also known as a rate case, or with a simplified rate filing. The regulatory cost charge, or RCC, is included in the non-fuel calculation for regulated utilities, and this is adjusted every year when the RCA sets a new RCC effective July 1st. Next slide, please.
Okay, Ms. Alvey, you skipped to slide 11, so I think we just had to catch up to you there a little bit.
Okay.
Maybe I should just pause. This is not a straightforward subject. Anybody have any questions so far? Representative Prax.
I do. Thank you. Through the chair, does the Regulatory Commission of Alaska regulate or limit the actual cost of producing power for the rail belt utilities that are the foundation for the formula? In other words, do you decide whether it is a good idea to invest in coal plants, gas-fired plants, wind generators, all of that? Do you have any authority of the decisions that they make?
Thank you.
Let me go back.
Do you want to maybe simplify that a little bit, Representative Prox?
Well, let me go back to.
Okay, hold on, Ms. Alvey, just for a second here.
Representative McKay, this is Commissioner Kerber, Chair Kerber. I've been getting kicked on and off the presentation. I've got it on the phone. I'm presently in. I'm happy to take a stab at that response if you'd like me to.
Okay, Mr. Kerber, can you hear me okay? And do you have a reliable line?
At this point, I'm doing fine, sir.
Okay. If you understood Mr. Representative Prox's question, go ahead and please respond.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Prox, what I think you're asking is, do we, quote-unquote, set direction for the utilities in their strategic plan for how they're going to generate their power? And the answer is no. We don't run the utilities. We regulate them. They present to us their plans, and they're also working to satisfy, of course, their customers, the ratepayers. And so consequently, I hope that this answers your question. We don't create the strategic plans for the utilities in terms of how they generate their power. We will, in fact, regulate them once they present them through the forms of a rate case. Does that answer your question, sir?
Right. I thank you. Through the chair, I think we're getting there. Follow up. So the rate, ultimately, it is the rate case that the Regulatory Commission of Alaska regulates. So if I'm a utility operator and I'm trying to decide whether to invest in coal versus gas versus hydro versus wind versus solar, and coal might be the least expensive, and wind might be the most popular. Does the Regulatory Commission of Alaska say, no, you can't invest in something because it affects the ratepayers negatively?
I don't believe that we have that kind of directive power to the utilities. I would add, though, Representative Prox, excuse me, through the chair, Representative Prox, that's not our core requirement. When we get the rate cases, the power generation is already there. Now, what I would offer to the committee this morning is that there's a new player in the sort of electric infrastructure space called the Electric Reliability Organization, and part of their mandate is to work on resource planning for the rail belt, which is the constituency of the ERO at this time. They have been certificated, but they're still in the process of standing up. And so some of those issues will be worked on by the ERO. So in order to hopefully provide the best mix of generation that will be good for the entire rail belt grid, as opposed to just each one individually, each utility individually. The thing about Alaska that is interesting and different from the lower 48 is, we are what's considered a true island of utility. While we are not an island, we're a peninsula off the top of North America, Hawaii being an island, of course, but we're not interconnected with either another state or another country for our generation. And because of the nature of Alaska, the distances involved, et cetera, the utilities, when they were standing themselves up, had to consider their own generation needs as almost many islands of generation in their own right. Now, as things have progressed over the history of our state, now we're beginning to go into this next phase, which has been the phase of having, or the era of having, an electric reliability organization that can help with these planning requirements so there's not an overbuild of generation, but the proper mix for the entire grid. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Chair McKay, I'll go mute this time unless you have a follow-up.
No, I think we're good, Mr. Kerber. Thank you very much. So let's get back on track with Ms. Alvey then. And I think, Ms. Alvey, you finished slide 11, and now we need to go back to slide 10, I think. You see what I mean?
We finished slide 10 and now to slide 11. So the last
non-fuel cost. Okay.
Should have been non-fuel costs.
Yeah, okay. Just want to make sure we're on the right slide. Non-fuel costs. Okay.
Thank you. So the next component in the PCE calculation is fuel costs. This is diesel costs and may include purchase power costs. These costs also must be supported, which is typically supported in the form of invoices, and the regulations provide more specificity for the supporting information at 3AC52640F. Fuel costs are adjusted with fuel reports for the non-regulated utilities and with the cost of power adjustment or COPA or fuel cost rate adjustment for regulated utilities. The RCA establishes filing schedules for these filings. For non-regulated, it typically depends on when the utility gets fuel delivered, and for the regulated, most utilities file quarterly. However, we have a few that file less frequently than that. Next slide, please. The last piece when setting the PCE amounts is the adjustment for when a utility fails to meet the generation efficiency and or line loss standards. And we only make these adjustments if the utility does not meet the standard, either one or both. If the standard is not met, no adjustment is made. And these standards are set out in our regulation at 3AC 52620B and C. Generation efficiency is measured as kilowatt hours generated divided by gallons consumed, and the minimum standard is based on two components: the percentage the diesel fuel is used to generate power and the number of kilowatt hours generated annually using diesel. And as shown on this slide, the range is from 8.5 kilowatt hours per gallon to 13.5 kilowatt hours per gallon. If the utility's generation efficiency is less than the applicable standard, we adjust or reduce the gallons consumed to what they would have been in order to meet the standard. This in turn lowers the fuel cost used in the PCE calculation and may lower the PCE amount. Line loss is measured as kilowatt hours generated minus the sum of kilowatt hours sold and station service divided by kilowatt hours generated. The minimum standard set out in 3AAC 52620B is 12%. If the utility's line loss exceeds 12%, we adjust the reported sales by increasing the sales to meet the standard. This adjustment may also lower the PCE amount. Next slide, please.
Okay, Ms. Alvey, Representative Prox has a question.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, are the standards that you follow set by statute? In other words, is that the legislature's job, or is this something that is determined internally by regulation?
Through the chair, this is the statute provides that the commission set standards, and then in the regulation, the standards are specified and set out.
Okay, follow up.
Representative Prox.
And are those, I'm guessing that the utilities have to kind of get together and figure out what is a reasonable standard for line loss. Is that how it, how the 12% got set up?
Through the chair, when we set the standard in our regulations, this was done through a regulations project. Where the utilities had the opportunity to comment and provide feedback and comments on what that standard should be. Then ultimately, when the commission adopted the regulation, we were set at 12%. If you would like additional history of how we got to that 12%, I would need to do a little bit of research.
Okay, that, just a comment, that would be worth a follow-up discussions, both on generation efficiency and line loss, because it, on the surface, it appears that they're just considering, fuel, kilowatts per gallon, and of course, if you're using a renewable source, there is no fuel charge, I guess, but there are other expenses that need to be taken into consideration to maybe measure kilowatt hours per dollar instead of gallon. and somehow compare the two, compare one power source to another on an even basis. And that same boils down to ultimately dollars, not gallons. All right. So separate discussion, something to think about in the future.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Prox. Any other questions at this point? Okay. Seeing none, Ms. Alvey, please continue.
The last portion of this, so in addition to calculating the PCE base rate and the PCE amounts, the RCA determines eligibility. The RCA and its predecessor, the Alaska Public Utilities Commission, or APUC, has been making determinations on eligibility since the beginning of the PCE program. And in a 1988 informal opinion, the Alaska Attorney General advised that the APUC was obligated to determine which utilities are eligible to participate in the PCE program. Alaska Statute 4245-153, number 3, defines the criteria for an eligible utility. However, AS 4245-115 includes exclusions from eligibility. These include exclusions relate to utilities whose primary source of power are Tyee Lake, Swan Lake, Solomon Gulch, and Terror Lake hydro projects. The RCA certificates the utilities and determines whether a utility is regulated or non-regulated, which AS 4205-711 provides for the exemptions from regulation. If a utility is eligible for PCE, the RCA's order granting the certificate may set out a filing schedule for the non-regulated for PCE reporting, or approve a tariff for the regulated utilities, which will likely include provisions for a COPA and PCE and how frequently those filings are made. The RCA requires reporting as specified in statute at AS 4245 and regulation, specifically 3AC 52600 through 690, which includes fuel reports or COPA filings and annual reports. If a utility fails to comply with those reporting requirements, the RCA makes recommendations to AEA that PCE disbursements be suspended. This is under 3AC 52690. Next slide. This concludes our presentation on the RCA's role of PCE, and open for any more or additional questions.
Okay, looking around the table for questions. I don't see any. And I'm looking, Representative Rauscher has not raised his hand. I want to make sure I don't leave Representative Rauscher out of the conversation.
Yeah. I'm good.
Okay, good. Okay, everyone. Okay, Ms. Alvey, thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate it very much. Please stay on the line just in case a later question arises that you can help us with. According to my program, next we will hear from the Alaska Energy Authority, Mr. Curtis Thayer. Can you hear me all right, Mr. Thayer?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay, great. So please put your name and affiliation on the record, and you can begin your presentation, Mr. Thayer, and Mr. Valdez will advance your slides for you.
All right. Thank you very much. My name is Curtis Thayer, and I serve as the Executive Director of the Alaska Energy Authority. Next slide. A little bit about the Alaska Energy Authority. We've had this slide before, but not only do we have railroad energy as far as owned assets, we do renewable energy efficiency planning, grants and loans, energy planning, rural as far as bulk fuel and powerhouses. And the topic of today's conversation is we also manage the power cost equalization program known as the PCE program. Next slide. This slide is new to you, but it is on the Representative Wright was the one that asked for it, which is our AEA Active Projects and Services. And also this slide does identify the number of PCE communities that we have currently at 193, along with our other projects. The one thing I will note is you'll see some bubbles that are larger than others, and those are where we spend circuit rider and assistance in rural Alaska. And those particular communities with higher bubbles is a more frequent visit, kind of what we call hotspots. Next slide, please. The Power Cost Equalization Program was established in 1985 and is one of the components of a statewide energy plan at the time to equalize the high cost of electricity in rural Alaska with a lower cost of urban Alaska. Next slide. Who is eligible to participate in PCE? As the RCA testified to, the PCE eligibility is determined by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in accordance with Alaska statute. Eligible customers include residential and community facilities such as water, sewer, public lighting, and clinics. What it does not include is government buildings or commercial buildings. Non-eligible customers, again, state and federal facilities and commercial, and any community with rates lower than the urban average, the PCE4, are not eligible. What you see here in this graph here represents all the currently the PCE eligible communities in 2023 at 193. As you can see, they're spread across the state, and primarily there's only one, which is Minto in the rail belt, because the rail belt is served by the five electrical utilities along that rail belt, which has helped establish the core. And then in Southeast Alaska, you'll see different communities on different islands, but of course it does not count the urban areas such as Juneau. Next slide. The power cost equalization program with 193 eligible communities represents 91 electric utilities, and it affects 82,000 Alaskans. An important note is for several years, the average residential rate was 500 kilowatts, and the legislature last year raised that the subsidy would apply up to 750 kilowatts. The average public facility is about 70 kilowatts, and last year we distributed $24.4 million. This year, due to the increase from 500 to 750 kilowatts, we anticipate that that's going to be about $40 million. So it is kind of a sharp increase, but again, we did increase the legislature increased the kilowatt availability by 250 or 50%. One thing I think it's important to note is where the state has invested in PCE through an endowment model. In urban Alaska, the state has invested in transmission and renewable energy projects such as Bradley Lake. AEA, through the state, owns the transmission line from Willow to Healy. It's 170 miles. It takes power to Fairbanks. Golden Valley is able to buy power cheaper in South Central Alaska and ship it north. And the cost savings to the Fairbanks community on that investment by the state is $35 to $40 million a year of what it normally would cost if they had to produce that power in Fairbanks. So when you look at it from that perspective, PCE, ironically, is cost the state about the same as that one investment did 30 years ago, and the cost savings every year that Golden Valley enjoys. Next slide. The PCE Endowment Fund, we're going to hear a little bit more from the Department of Revenue, but the PCE Endowment was created and capitalized in fiscal year 2001 and is managed by the Department of Revenue. Prior to that, PCE was competing for UGF dollars during the budget cycle, and there was an endowment created. The PCE disbursements are funded by the endowment, and the current market value is a little bit, about $279 million as of March 31st, 2023. We've seen that fund go over $1 billion. We've seen it go below $1 billion, but it averages $1 billion. And, according to Alaska statute, provides that 5% of the PCE endowment fund with a 3-year average market value may be appropriated to the fund. And we get that calculation every summer. And that is what we base the PCE program on as far as available money. Senate Bill 98 is pending before the legislature to move the PCE endowment from the Department of Revenue to the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. AEA is neutral in that, and it does not affect the day-to-day operation of how we manage the fund. It's just who would be, how we manage the PCE program, not necessarily who manages the fund itself. Next slide.
Okay, Mr. Thayer, Representative Prox has a question, please.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, the third bullet on slide 7 says that the fund 5% of the power cost equalization fund over a 3-year market value may be appropriated. Has that ever been debated? For instance, the permanent fund, the draw from the permanent fund is a 5-year rolling average to sort of stabilize the earnings available for appropriation. Has that been thought about for the power cost equalization fund? Should that be thought about?
Through the chair, Representative Fox, yes, it has. It was debated in the legislature last year.
Okay.
When they raised the kilowatt from 500 to 750 kilowatts, there was rather a lengthy debate in Senate Finance on that particular issue on the management of the plan, the management of the fund, and how it should be invested. And if I recall the debate last year, you know, there's pros and cons. Obviously, on a 3-year average, and you have a very good years, then it's good for the thing. Good for the endowment. If you're over 5 years and you have good years and bad years, then you kind of have a more leveling effect. And that was a policy call by the legislature that they made last year. So yes, it was debated, and I believe now when we look at SB 98, which is still pending in the state senate. Matter of fact, there's a concurrent hearing going on right now, and I have staff taking part in that hearing. That's being debated now as far as the management between the Department of Revenue and the Department of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation and their management investments and the overall look of the program. But for us, we're neutral in that discussion because it is a policy call and set by statute by the legislature.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Thayer. Please continue.
On page 8, where we talk about the PC endowment history, this gives you just an understanding of the fund balances. So you can say where I previously say that it averages about $1 billion. It is 978, but as of FY22, it was a little over $1 billion. And what that does is you see the annual investment, the inflows, the annual investment earnings. And so 76 million, 74, 48 million, 150 million, and then last year the fund lost $143 million due to market conditions. With that, there is transfers to the PCE to AEA to manage the program, and then also we also do the administrative fee to the Regulatory Commission, as they also have a huge aspect of this. And then there's also a management fee for the Department of Revenue. Now, in FY21, with the earnings being $150 million, normally the first batch of money goes to the PCE, so about $40 million. And then, according to statute, then it goes to the, It goes to the community assistance at about $30 million. And then in statute, depending on the level of it, there's a cascading waterfall that up to $25 million could be divided between powerhouse upgrades in rural Alaska, or it could go to the Renewable Energy Fund, or it could go to help capitalize the revolving bulk fuel loan program for rural Alaska. There's only twice in the last 20 years that the fund has earned enough money to pay for everything. This year is not the case, but last year it was. And again, it's a market issue, and they just allowed for anything over and above after the 40 million, the 30 million, and the 25 would go back into the fund. But again, that has only happened twice, the most recent in 2022 with the available 2021 funds. Next slide is the PCE endowment earnings calculation. Again, I think the Department of Revenue will go over this more thoroughly. But it's just where the average market value has been, the fiscal earnings, which was that loss, which allowed with the 5% averaging market value of $54,900,000, which clearly allows for the $40 million that's been set aside for PCE is not a problem in, paying for the PCE for this year. And then we go down here, look at the rural assistance, the PCE operational, the Department of Treasury, And we did have a fiscal note, and I will note that we were unsure of what that increase from 500 to 750 kilowatts would be. So we had put a fiscal note in for $48 million, but it's going to be closer to $40 million. And so that other additional $8 million would lapse back into the fund or be available for rural assistance. Next slide. A little bit of the PCE terminology. I think we kind of walked through it. As far as the PCE floor or what the base rate is, which is roughly 20 cents, we do have a PCE ceiling of a dollar. We do have communities in rural Alaska that the cost per kilowatt is $1.75. And so the state will do the 20 to 100 to a dollar, that 80 cent, depending on where they fall, but nothing over a dollar. One thing that's important to note is if the power costs go down on the rail belt, with the averaging of the communities, then for every penny it goes down on the rail belt below that 20 cent mark of today, that's $1.7 million available more towards rural Alaska. So if we were able to knock our price down, you know, even 5 cents, would be $7 or $8 million more available to rural Alaska. And again, it's a statutory formula established by the legislature. So that floor is very important that we watch. And then the PCE effective rate is the rate charged by the utility minus any PCE levels. And the PCE level, the state reimbursement per eligible kilowatt. One thing that we do at AEA and every year we provide to the legislature and to Alaskans is what we call a PCE statistical report. And that report lists by community everything dealing with their fiscal, what their PCE payments are, their eligible kilowatts, what their average use is per customer. Also additional statistic data includes the generated and purchased per kilowatt, what their generation cost is, and what is consumed and sold, and what the efficiency and potential line loss is. And that report is available online, and it has also been emailed to all the members of the legislature. We do that in the first part of March. And then for the utility nerds, as I would call them, we have a statistic report by utility. So you can look at it by community, which is more popular, or you can actually look at it by the 91 communities and how they do it overall. So we have both of those available. Slide 11, I think, is important to note. In the past, there's been an issue about whether this was a sweep or a sweepable fund. This is where the PCE dollars would require a two-thirds vote by the legislature to be used, and that's normally a vote that was pretty routine for years and years. And in the last 4 to 5 years, it's been more political, where the legislature, whether it be the minority or the majority, in the leveraging of the budget times would not get to that three-quarter vote. Therefore, there was not funding available for PCE at the time. It led to a lot of angst in rural Alaska, not knowing if this PCE was going to be paid into these communities, and also for AEA, who managed the program in addition to the RCA. And so finally, about 2 years ago, there was a friendly lawsuit, I will call it, because nobody opposed the lawsuit, either the legislature, who was the plaintiff, or the governor, who was the defendant, to finally determine if it was subject to a sweep provision. And the courts ruled that the PCE program endowment is not subject to a sweep provision. The legislature established the PCE endowment fund as a separate fund outside the state general fund, and the order states. And so since that time in 2021, we have not had any issues since the endowment does pay for PCE, and it does not require the three-quarters vote, and it's been a lot. We've not had any of the issues for the angst that we witnessed in the previous couple of years. And so with that, I'm available for any questions, and I thank you for your time for us to help explain the PCE program and how AEA operates the program. And we do it with in-house staff, administering a $40 million program, and we have three staff members currently that does that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Thayer. I have a couple questions. I'll start with Representative Carrick.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Thayer, I have a couple of really basic questions. The first was way back on slide 3. We were looking at the map of Alaska. Ithaca, I think. Yeah. And just curious if you can add a little bit more information to why we have so many active projects in Southwest Alaska and fewer on the North Slope. They seem like similar areas to me in terms of needs. So I'm just wondering if you can provide a little extra context there.
Through the chair, Representative Perry, primarily because there are more communities in Southwest Alaska. North Slope has limited, and then also, depending on the communities up there, a lot of them are self-sufficient in the sense that they are part of the Arctic Slope borough, and so the borough is a very wealthy borough. And so with that, a lot of programs or a lot of areas are matching funds, or they fund things that are not unable to be funded in other parts of Alaska. For example, on the slope, some of the communities use natural gas for electrical generation and for heat, which is not available in the majority of rural Alaska. It's just the nature where they are. But also, again, there's just fewer communities on the North Slope.
An additional question.
Okay. Representative Carrick, please follow up.
Thank you, through the chair. Thank you for that answer. I think that was what I was suspecting, but just wanted that clarity. And then on slide 10, when we're talking about the PCE base rate, I'm just curious about what the boundaries of Anchorage are for purposes of that calculation, and if it includes Eagle River and Mat-Su and some of those other fairly urban areas. Is that a part of setting that calculation? And if it's not, and it were, do you have any insight on how that could potentially change the base rate?
Through the chair, Representative Carrick, they are included. When you look at the rail belt utilities, you are looking at Chugach Electric as well as MEA and Golden Valley and Alaska Light and Power in Juneau. And they're based on a weighted average of those communities based on the size of those communities, Chugach obviously being the larger. So they're weighted more heavily than MEA, but they are part of the calculation.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. I'll get to Representative Prox, but Representative Rauscher you have your hand up, Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. Thank you. I was just wondering, how does the reimbursement or the subsidy get to the ratepayers in rural Alaska? Is that a check at the end of the year? Are they get a reimbursement check, or how does that? Does it just come right off of their bill? I just wondered, do you know how that actually gets to the ratepayer?
Representative, through the chair, Representative Rauscher, very good question. And that is, they submit monthly to AEA what their power costs were for the previous month. We review that internally, and we cut a check to that particular utility, or in some cases, it's a community if they don't have a utility there. And so with that, we are going through every month we go through 193 requests for payment. Caveats is they have to do it within 3 months. So, you know, if they're requesting July, or if they're requesting for something in January, we're into May, by statute, we don't go back and pay for May. I mean, go back and pay for January. So we only can look back 3 months. But we do work with the communities. We work with the RCA. If we have communities that are having internal issues or within their community or their city clerk or that, we do try to work with them to make sure that they do file on time. And then we are able to normally turn around a check to the community within 30 days. That was one of the issues that I referenced when we had the PCE sweep, and when for a period of time when the legislature was undecided or could not get the votes, then we had no money to fund the program and therefore could not pay communities. But that issue has now gone away. But we do it on a monthly basis to 193 communities.
Well, I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, and then Representative Prox has a question for Mr. Thayer.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, through the chair. I wanted to go back to the court ruling, and how has that affected Alaska Energy Authority's ability to manage a program. I would think that would make it simpler, but have you any thoughts on that?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Fox, it has actually made our life a lot easier. Because, you know, one of the things is we had run the program, we're getting, you know, as far as getting the information and then moving and then processing applications. And when we had the issue with the reverse sweep, and there was no funding available, then in all intents and purposes, we did not do it, but we had the potential of having to lay off our PCE staff because there was no funding, not even for their salaries. There was not funding for the Department of Revenue to manage the fund, let alone payments into the communities, which caused a lot of angst in these smaller communities that very much are dependent on PCE payments. And these PCE payments in the summertime especially are important when you're looking for fall to help pay for fall fuel delivery charges. And so having this resolved by the courts and having a definite understanding between the legislature and the administration, this is, you know, very, very helpful for us. And we've not had the hiccups. And actually, I would say our delivery of funding and the communities have been better because we don't have this hanging over our head as a potential issue at the end of a legislative session. So we do thank the legislature and thank the administration for having that issue resolved, because administratively it's made it a lot easier, and the communities can depend on it more.
Now, follow up, Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair. And then there are projects that are also affected by the amount of earnings left over in the power cost equalization fund. And does this stabilize the amount of money available for projects?
Through the chair, it depends completely on the earnings of the fund. You know, the earnings of the fund have to be pays for the PCE program by statute, then the power cost, then the community assistance program, which is $30 million. So the earnings need to be roughly $70 million before the provision kicks in on allowing for $25 million worth of projects. And so as we all hope for a banner year in the stock market and in our own investments, we hope that too with the PCE endowment to allow for it. But once we have the funding for that year, only money is spent that we have earnings for. So when we had the record $150 million earnings and we had $25 million of extra project, the legislature appropriated that fund, $10 million for powerhouses in rural Alaska and $15 million for the Rural Energy Fund. And then as we come up to this year and there's not enough, there's a loss, and the average does not allow for projects, then we just don't put projects forward because there's not funding. So that was only a case when funding is actually available. And it's not something we count on or budget on. It's just something that when those earnings are done well, we have places that we could definitely use that money. But again, it's strictly up to the market.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Representative Prox.
Would reducing the volatility of money available for projects, should we give some thought to reducing that volatility somehow, which would seem to me to be able to make the projects more easy to manage and possibly less expensive? Is that worth thinking about?
Through the chair, it would definitely be worth thinking about. The endowment was never really designed to pay for projects. It just happened to be where we've had some windfall years where we've had some funding available. But again, it's really up to the money managers, which is not AEA. It is the Department of Revenue and how they manage the risk of that program. Because not only, you know, I understand there's always a desire to earn more, but there's also how we manage the funds to make sure that the endowment is going to be there for a long time to provide for the intended purpose, and that is to cover the cost of power cost, PCE, the power cost equalization program as a whole. Okay. But again, that's really a policy call for the legislature and by the Department of Revenue at this point.
Okay.
Well, quick follow up.
A quick follow up by Representative Prowse.
Yeah, it won't be, but would the would the Alaska Energy Authority be able to provide us with some data, scenarios that, given the current volatility, we're able to do X? If the volatility was reduced somehow, we'd be able to do Y. Would the Alaska Energy Authority have the data available to perhaps give us some guidelines on that?
To the chair, I believe by statute, we have that guideline. Again, the first $40 million or roughly goes to the Power Cost Equalization Program. If there's additional earnings, then $30 million goes to community assistance. And then only after that, a percentage of what is left, up to $25 million, could be used in those three buckets we have discussed as far as being rural powerhouses, renewable energy fund, or going into the bulk fuel revolving loan fund for rural Alaska. And so really, it would be probably more of a conversation with the money managers as far as the Department of Revenue and how they predict and their investment strategy. Again, we would love to have additional money that we were able to fund those three, the waterfall as well as the PC program and the community assistance. But again, that's dependent on the earnings of it. We know that if we had extra earnings with that $25 million, generally we put it into additional powerhouses because we can get federal match for that, dollar for dollar. So if we had an extra $10 million, we get $10 million more in federal. So get $20 million to develop powerhouses, what we did with $15 million, and that is fund 27 projects, renewable energy projects across the state in their feasibility and early design stages. And we've had great success with that program, and we do thank the legislature for recently passing that program indefinitely so we can continue with that power project fund. But I think really it's probably more of a conversation with the Department of Revenue as far as their investment strategy, because we definitely can spend what they earn, but we would leave it to the money managers to help with that.
We'll be hearing from them next. Representative Rauscher has his hand up. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it through the chair. So we have a bill in committee. It's the RPS bill. And let's say we keep 2080. I mean, we keep 80 and 2040 in the bill. How is that going to affect PCE down the line? I just want to understand. I mean, everything affects everything in some way. And so now you have we know that that's just renewables, but let's say that those renewables add up to a savings of half of what the rail belt is paying now. How does that affect the rural Alaska?
Okay, through the chair, Representative Rauscher, for every penny on PCE, it averages about $1.7 million. So, if there's a savings in the rail belt for every penny, then about $1.7 million would be available more for PCE. It drops the floor; it makes that distance between the floor and the ceiling larger. And so that would be a benefit. As far as it ties to the particular RPS bill, that's pending legislation. I've seen numbers, and the NREL, the National Energy Lab, has said that it potentially is going to cost the rail about 20% to 30% more in cost initially. So again, that's some pending legislation that needs to be worked out, but there's some rough edges on that. I think whatever policy call that we do on legislation in the rural, on the rail belt, we really have to look to see what it does in rural Alaska as far as it affects the calculation for rural Alaska. And so I'm not saying that it's going to raise it or lower it. There's just been numbers out there floating that initially it could increase the rates before they drop the rates, which would have a negative impact on rural Alaska. But if we can lower the rates on the rail belt, then it's going to be a benefit to rural Alaska for having more money available for the power cost utilization program.
So a follow-up question?
Yeah, follow-up, Representative Rauscher.
Thank you. Through the chair, so that was going to be question number two. If it doubles the rates, then how does that, that affects it the opposite way per kilowatt hour, correct?
Through the chair, yes, it does. If the rates go up, you know, right now, say we're at a base rate of 20 cents, we have a dollar as the cap by statute, or a dollar, so that's 80 cents. So if we go to 25 cents, then only 75 cents is going to be able, is that difference in rural Alaska. We are raising the rates in rural Alaska in regards to PCE reimbursement. So that's where there's a real fine line of looking of how what we do on the rail belt, how it does affect rural Alaska positively or negatively. And again, it's a formula established by the legislature, and it's been that way for years. I'm not advocating that you open up the formula, but it is a formula driven, and that's been the way the program has operated for decades, actually.
So, follow-up question?
Yeah, Representative Rauscher.
To the chair. So, the transmission line is, I don't know, it's anywhere from 1.9 to 2.9. That, if the rates go up over that and it actually ends up over a dollar, what happens then when it goes over a dollar?
Well, through the chair, the PCE calculation is done by the RCA, and they're looking at the cost of power. So when you say over a dollar, I'm just saying currently right now the cap is a dollar, and the floor is roughly 20 cents, a little bit less than 20 cents. So we have that spread. So again, if costs go up on the rail belt, then that does affect negatively rural Alaska. If the cost goes down on the rail belt, then it's a positive impact in rural Alaska. The way the formula is currently in statute.
So basically, are they on their own then? I guess that's where I'm going with the whole question. In rural Alaska.
Through the chair, I guess when I don't understand your point of are they on their own. It's just their calculation is based on what they receive as a floor is based on the cost of the weighted average. And so keep in mind that you also have you also have Alaska Light and Power in Juneau, part of that weighted calculation. Granted, they are the smallest power utility among the weighted utilities, but ironically, they have the cheapest cost because they have hydro.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, can the price of kilowatt per hour go up so high in the valley and the rail belt to where PC will not actually pay out to the communities in rural Alaska?
Well, through the chair, I believe there's always going to be PCE, and the question is as to what amount they pay out according to the statutory formula. So they'll always pay out something. The question is how much? And that's, you know, and I would imagine, not speaking for the railroad utilities, but since they're all member-owned co-ops, I've always seen them operate to try to reduce rates, not raise rates, because they are locally owned by the co-op members. And so I don't see the utilities in my working with them trying to raise rates. They're always looking at ways to reduce rates, which again is for their members. It just does have that side benefit with the PCE calculation.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, staying on that same subject, to the extent that the power cost equalization, that the money is reduced for day-to-day subsidy, that leaves more money available in the fund to invest in, make capital investments. Is that a fair statement? Kind of a zero, sort of a zero sum. There's short-term and long-term effects, but.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Prox, the purpose of the PCE program and the endowment is to pay for the PCE program, not capital projects. And the legislature has not done it, and I would not encourage them to use the endowment for capital projects. The endowment was established to help with power cost equalization cost of $40 million and community assistance, so roughly $70 million, that prior to the establishment of the endowment came out of the general funds at UGF. And so it was a compromise. It was a proposal. And keep in mind where the endowment is setting at, you know, $1 billion on a given day, the state of Alaska has invested billions of dollars with an S at the end in urban Alaska costs, whether it be Bradley Lake, whether it be the transmission lines, whether it be tax credits in Cook Inlet to encourage additional drilling. And so it's been a policy of the state, an energy policy of the state, to have the PCE program help levelize, at least for the first 750 kilowatts, that they pay the same rate as urban Alaska or the rail belt along with Juneau does. And so that was the purpose of it. So if your question is about capital projects out of the endowment, that has not been the practice of the endowment. The endowment is for the PCE and for the community assistance program primarily.
Follow up, Representative Prox.
Yeah, I guess I'm perhaps misunderstanding. It's from the earnings of the endowment.
Oh, okay. I apologize. Again, the earnings of the PCE endowment would have to be, you know, clearly in excess of, you know, probably, you know, north of $70 to $75 million, because again, you have the first two tranches and then it's up to 75% up to $25 million of anything over and above that. And only twice have we had something north of $10 million, and only last year when the earnings were $150 million were we able to fully utilize that $25 million cap for capital projects. And again, that $25 million cap was set by the legislature in statute. So it's only been used once in that fashion, the earnings, into its entirety, once before, partially.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Thayer? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Mr. Thayer, for being with us today. Very informative. And if you could just stay on the line, we have one more presenter. From the Department of Revenue, Mr. Zachary Hanna. Mr. Hanna, can you hear me okay?
I can, thank you.
Okay, great. Mr. Hanna, please put your name and affiliation on the record and begin your presentation. And Mr. Valdez is here to advance your slides.
Okay, great. Well, certainly thanks for your time today. For the record, I am Zach Hanna. I'm the Chief Investment Officer for the Department of Revenue. I'm going to start on page 2 of the DOR presentation. So I lead a team that manages roughly $49 billion in assets for the state, $40 billion for the retirement systems, and $9 billion in funds for the state, like the Power Cost Equalization Fund, which obviously is the subject of discussion today. Let's go ahead and forward to the next slide. So page 3 is a summary of the investment policy and asset allocation process that we revisit at least annually for all the funds that we manage. We work to design an investment program for each fund that balances the investment objectives, the risk tolerance, and other attributes that the funds have. For the past 3 years, really since the start of 2021, we've been doing this in a transparent process with quarterly meetings with an independent investment advisory committee. Talk a little bit more about that in a second. Go ahead and move to the next page. So page 4 has a draft of the PC investment policy for FY24 that we'll be discussing with this investment advisory committee actually next week. Policy is driven by statute. It's designed to prudently maximize total return and consider the future purchasing power of the fund. So we've adopted a high risk tolerance for this fund since it does have a long time horizon. You guys have talked a little bit about smoothing. It has 3-year smoothing to help dampen that volatility. And clearly, you know, from the discussion today, the fund has a need for both relatively high distributions and in statute at least some inflation protection to try to preserve, you know, kind of intergenerational equity at this fund over time. And so the resulting asset allocation, you can see an example of the investment policy on the right. It's roughly 70% equities and 30% exposure to bonds. And you can see highlighted over the next 10 years, The total expected return for the fund is 6.83%, and the return after expected inflation is 4.33%. So we expect this asset allocation to be adopted, something very similar to this asset allocation to be adopted, and that is our forward kind of base case for kind of earnings both before and after inflation for this fund over the next 10 years. And as we'll cover here in a moment, these forward expectations, somewhat coincidentally, but it's not really a coincidence, very similar to historical PC performance that I'll touch on. So let me pause there for a minute because I think there are a number of questions that touched on kind of earnings power and smoothing, and certainly we can cover those at the end as well. Maybe that makes good sense too, but I'll pause for a second before turning to see if folks want to discuss some of those concepts now.
Okay, they're all quiet, Mr. Hanna, so we can continue, please.
Okay, great. Let's turn to the next page. And so page five has some, we're going to talk a little bit about performance over the past, over the past kind of 10 or 11 years, but certainly including 2022. This page has some generic detail on investment performance over the past 5 years by asset class. That we can go through here briefly before going into PCE-specific performance. A lot of focus on 2022, since both stock and bond performance was very poor. Stocks were down 19% during the calendar year 2022, and bonds were down 13%, which was one of the more striking aspects of last year's market, due largely to inflationary pressures and a very significant increase in interest rates off of, effectively a zero floor at the start of the year. And so as you can kind of see in that 2022 column that's highlighted in yellow, this left investors with really nowhere to hide, certainly in terms of public market investments. Unless you were invested in cash last year, you lost a reasonable amount of money. And so you can kind of see there's an inset table on the left, and really any combination of stocks and bonds was really bracketed by that negative 13% return for bonds and that negative 19% return for equities. So the good news is, as you kind of look at, the rightmost columns in that table, both the fiscal year-to-date returns and the last quarter, is the markets have rebounded actually fairly considerably. And really is even when you think about the calendar year 2022, it was really the first half of 2022 where most of the losses were seen. And so we'll touch on a PC's specific performance on the next page. Okay, so as mentioned, page six does have PC's performance. And so quite a rebound from the first half of 2022. The numbers in the top table show performance through March. So fiscal year-to-date performance was a positive 6.3% through March. And we just closed April, and so our internal number, which is likely what we'll end up once we publish it, the fund was up 7.5% kind of through April. And as you can kind of see in the rightmost section of that table, that even with 2022, the long-term performance of PCE has been very strong. So from the inception of what, at least in the Department of Revenue, we think was kind of modern PCE, really after the last $400 million infusion was put in, the performance has been 6.7%. As you can also see from that excess return number, the performance of PCE has exceeded its benchmark over all these time periods. And I'm not going to cover much of the detail in that bottom, basically it's an eye chart, kind of hard to see. You really have to scrutinize some of it. But most of the asset classes that we manage for PCE have outperformed over time, which is what's resulted in those excess returns versus PCE's benchmark. So pause for a second before turning the page.
Okay, please proceed. Thank you.
Okay. Let's move forward to the next page. And so this is another way to look at performance. Page seven has PCE's cash flows. Director Thayer covered some of these, but these go back really over that period that, again, we kind of consider modern PCE, the last kind of 10-plus years. You can see earnings, withdrawals, and then on the right, some simple earnings and spending rates, along with totals and some averages. And so although there certainly has been a lot of talk about a difficult 2022, you can see that earnings over this time period, again, very similar to the performance numbers that we saw, earnings have been 6.8%, so well in excess of the 4.3% spending rate. And as you can see just above that, or just below that, excuse me, that the earnings prior to 2022 actually were exceptionally high, 9.2%. So we really were going from a period of exceptionally strong earnings to a bit of a retrenchment, certainly in 2022. As you can kind of see from cash flows and the like, you had very positive, effectively, if you look at earnings for, the period ended June of 21 versus June of 22, it's almost a reverse. We had extremely high earnings, from June of 2021. And then with the market pullback last year, those earnings, came back. And so as I touched on in the asset allocation page, forward expectations actually are very consistent with this historical performance. So our expectation for this portfolio is that certainly over the longer term, it should be able to continue to provide for the type of performance that we've seen historically. And that is, performance on a gross basis that, is 6.8, probably close to 7%. And then net of inflation is in that lower kind of 4.3% sort of figure. And so when you think about from a spending perspective, obviously, PCE can spend up to 5% of that 3-year look back period, that over time, as you look back at the fund over time, the actual spending has been closer to 4.3%, which is very close to that expected real return or interim return after inflation. And if spending if forward spending looks like that, you should expect that PCE ultimately will retain a reasonably high degree kind of inflation proofing and preserve, some ability for kind of intergenerational equity as the program kind of marches forward. So let me turn to the next page.
Let's, Representative Prox has a question. Mr. Hand, please.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, when you mentioned that the fund has consistently somewhat outperformed the benchmarks, are the benchmarks managed funds, similar managed funds? Or is it the market index fund of something or other of an unmanaged fund?
So through the chair, and I'll just turn back to page 6. And so the benchmarks are all industry standard passive market index funds. And so, again, these are discussed with an independent advisory group, agreed to by the revenue commissioner and the like. And these are again, kind of industry standard benchmarks for these. So the degree of outperformance is largely the result of, some degree of active management of these funds.
Okay, follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Prox.
And then is the management expense, should that be deducted from the performance comparison, or is that comparing with the management expense in there?
So through the chair, the management expense of there are some externally managed funds in this lineup. The expenses of those funds, this performance is already net of those expenses. But the expense of the Department of Revenue is these are gross of that. So you would have to deduct, at least for the current period, an additional 10 basis points, from these numbers. And so, basically, the excess returns are covering cost and then a bit more, which is, part of the intent.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Please continue, Mr. Hanna.
Okay. And so moving forward to slide 8. So this was designed as kind of a quick summary, because I know you guys have a fairly full agenda today. So this is actually the kind of conclusion slide. Kind of in summary, DOR does have a strong independent process to implement kind of all state investment policies, including PCE. We've designed PCE's program to provide a high level of inflation-adjusted spending over time, and our forward expectations and the long-term results have been kind of consistent with, you know, kind of meeting the needs, you know, of the program. And so, you know, with that, I certainly thank you folks for your time, and absolutely happy to try to address any questions you have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hanna. Any questions for Mr. Hanna? All right, seeing none, are there any questions for any of our presenters today? Looks like not. So I would like to thank our presenters today for very informative presentations on the PCE. I know I've learned a lot and have a much better appreciation for how this system works. So we thank our presenters for your time, and we hope to see you again soon, and wish you luck with all your endeavors. So with that, I will bring our meeting to a close. I would thank everyone for being here. I see no further business before us, but I would like to announce that there are no Energy Committee meetings scheduled for next week. So make sure you mark your calendars accordingly. And with that, I will adjourn our meeting today at 11:32.